This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
1 o'clock, we like to let you decide what we talk about. Dennis puts out a poll. Then we, for the most part, we talk about the number one vote getter. So should we do that, Dennis Cox?
Let's do it.
Oh, man. Fancy. All right, so what should we talk about at 1 o'clock today? Here are your choices. Tiger Woods, is he finished? Are the Canes done retooling? NBA age limit. Panthers, a playoff team. That came in last.
Yeah.
NBA age limit. Second to last. Tiger Woods finished was the runner-up. Are the Canes done retooling? We'll talk a little bit more about this with Luke DeCock, so some quick thoughts on that. I hope not, because if they're done retooling, they have holes in their lineup, especially on the back end. I don't like what I see on their third defensive pairing. Really don't. It's the name Jake Gardner is for the time being there. Don't want that.
Nope.
Ethan Bear hasn't been re-signed, but I'm not sure. Like, I'd like them to, especially since re-signing him is going to cost, I think, a minimum of $2 million. Might be more than that. The qualifying offer, I think, was more for more than $2 million.
Well, I think he's arbitration eligible.
Right, but they had to give him a qualifying offer. And the qualifying offer has to be a certain percentage above his last salary.
He made $2 million last year.
Right. So I'm pretty sure that's the way it works. Anyway, now maybe Ethan Bear will be fine as a third pair defenseman. But
last year, before he had COVID, he was skating on that top pair with Slavin a lot.
Yeah.
And he was doing fine.
He was okay.
Yeah, and then...
Right, but...
Took him a while to recover, and then...
He never recovered. He never recovered.
Fully did.
Because he never got back in shape. But the problem with Bear is that when he wasn't playing with Slavin, there were moments, but didn't do it. Didn't do it for me. I liked Cole and Smith as a third pair last year, and that's ultimately what they used in the playoffs. Now they were flawed too. No, Mike, I'm not kidding. They were flawed as well. You want to take another step in the playoffs. I would like to see more physicality. Bear also wasn't as good a skater as I thought. I thought Bear was going to be a better skater. The game is too fast now. If you don't have a banger back there, you need somebody who can skate. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to see them get quicker. That's the advantage Jalen Chatfield has.
Yeah.
Is that he's a better skater, is physical, has a little bit of an offense, but again, I think that he's more suited to be a seventh defenseman. Also, they can send him to the minor leagues. So Chatfield has a two-way deal. So they need to get better there. I still need to see some size and speed in the forward group that they have not addressed. But also, they don't have a lot of room because they kind of have 12 NHL forwards that we expect to be in the lineup.
Yeah.
So unless a trade is made, then it's going to that's sort of the group that we've got. So I hope they're not done. I hope there's some other alterations they can make. But I think Pacioretty's going to end up playing with Aho and Jarvis on the top pair, on the top line.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Oh.
No, not at all.
You had mentioned this earlier. Second line center.
Mm-hmm.
They have a second line center.
Well, I was curious who you thought it would be.
It's going to be Kotkaniemi.
Yeah.
I mean, really, Staal is the second center.
Mm.
Okay. He is they're going to be their checking line, but Staal, they're always going to get matched up, especially at home, against one of the other team's best offensive lines. Right? So whether, they're playing the Rangers, he's either going to get the Trocheck line. Or he's going to get the Zibanejad line. During the playoffs, it was the Zibanejad line. So that's always going to happen. So Kotkaniemi, they're the second center because he's going to play, my guess is, with Svechnikov and Teravainen. I'm just guessing here. So he has to get better. All right, but that's who it is. So we can't be running around here going, I wonder if they're going to have who's their second center. Like, we know who their second center is.
Yeah.
It's Jesperi Kotkaniemi. They paid him for 8 years.
I guess that second score line. I wasn't sure if they would maybe try and give Drury a shot there just based off how he plays, based off of if Kotkaniemi. Because Kotkaniemi last year, you would have thought getting fourth line matchups would have produced more. But
yes.
Obviously, and getting power play time would have produced more, but did not.
I'm 100% with you on that. Mm-hmm. It was not awesome.
No.
For Jesperi Kotkaniemi. It wasn't. But I don't think they're... I'll be surprised if Jack... Like, I think the future of Jack Drury is great.
Yeah.
I think the future could be ahead of Kotkaniemi. But that's entirely up to Kotkaniemi. Like, somebody asked, how much is Max Domi going to play after the trade? And I said, well, that really depends on Martin Natchez. If Natchez doesn't play better, then Max Domi's going to get more time.
Yeah.
Actually... Neither guy played well enough
to
deserve a lot of airtime. All right, what were our other options?
Tiger Woods
finished? No, look. His first three tournaments since the accident that nearly claimed his leg were majors. Mm-hmm. He played well at the Masters, couldn't putt, and that's the toughest walk in golf. He made the cut on the number, rallied to make the cut on the number at the PGA, and played poorly, couldn't putt, and then withdrew before the final round because it was too painful to walk. Mm-hmm. And this tee to green, he was okay at this tournament. He could not putt or chip at all. Tiger was terrible around the greens. So, yeah, of course he's going to play more. He's not done. He's going to play the Masters. I'll bet you the next time he plays will be at his tournament in Hero in the Bahamas that, you know, raises a bunch of money for the Woods Foundation. It's an 18-player event with no cut. So I do believe that he'll play one more time this year, and then he'll play occasionally. What Tiger needs is at least a few competitive rounds before a major. So let Tiger play at Hero, and then let Tiger play about a month before the Masters. Let him play at Bay Hill, the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Let him play there, and then let him play the Masters. Like, he has to play a little bit of competitive golf. Otherwise, he has no chance at any of the majors. Those are the only tournaments he's really going to play. He's got to be able to play a little bit more than that. Otherwise, he has absolutely no chance. Oh, I should say, he's going to play with his son Charlie at the PNC Championship.
Yes. Well, I think the reason why people are saying, well, or questioning, is Tiger done? Because based off what he said in his post-round interview, like, hey, this might be the last time I play at St. Andrews in the Open. Now, he said, I'm going to continue to play more British Opens.
Yes, again. Call it the Open Championship, Tiger. Otherwise,
whatever. Who cares?
They're not bringing you back.
Sure. I'm sure they won't. But the fact that he said, yeah, I'm still going to play British Opens, but I may not be St. Andrews. So, no, he's not done, but he's saying I might be done playing a British Open at St. Andrews. That's basically what he said.
Well, yeah. Again, I think he's going to play another British Open.
Yeah. He's said so himself.
At St. Andrews. No, I know. I think he'll...
Oh, at St. Andrews?
I think he will play another one at St. Andrews. I do. I absolutely do. This is a tournament that if he can play a little bit of competitive golf, this is a tournament he can win into... maybe even into his 60s, to be honest. Let's just remember this. In back-to-back years, I know he is almost, he's sort of become a villain. In 2008, Greg Norman, at age, I believe, 58, had the lead in the final round. I think a two-shot lead going to the final round at, I think it was Birkdale. And he fell apart, and Padraig Harrington won. The following year, Tom Watson had an 8-foot putt on the final green to win the Open Championship at age 59. 8-foot putt, final green to win. Missed the putt. Lost in the playoff. So, because length does not matter, Tiger will always have a chance if he can have some level of competitive rounds of golf leading into his major season. Once he gets that, he'll be fine. But to show up at the Masters and then the PGA and then 2 months later, right? The PGA is in May. 2 months later to have your next event be the Open Championship. He had no chance. Adam Gold here from my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. All right, Coach, simple. When do we start tax planning in retirement?
We should start as soon as possible because here's one thing, Adam. Taxes are not going away.
Right.
And so the game here is we know the rules. A lot of people want to ignore the rules or act like they don't are familiar with them, but the IRS knows the rules. And so when we get to retirement, they're going to reach in and start taking some of their money out of your accounts. So the secret here is to put a force field around as much as possible by strategically moving some of our money to Roth IRA or some of the other vehicles that aren't taxed, like special life insurance policies. You can borrow against your money there and never have to pay tax on your money that you build up inside your cash value. So there are a lot of strategies here. The one strategy that does not work is ignoring it. So let's make sure to not ignore it. The next 10 people will do for you your very own tax and retirement plan that'll help you minimize taxation all the way through retirement.
800-661-7383. All you got is call, or you can text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter. Was that Rory McIlroy making another putt? Yes! Or Rory McIlroy is now 300 par. I'm doing this live. Luke Dukak is waiting. We should just talk to Luke Dukak and have me not be distracted watching Rory McIlroy. What are you doing right now, Luke?
I'm working. I had the golf on this morning. I watched the morning rounds, watched Tiger cross the burn, all that stuff. But I've had to turn it off. My pick to win, Tommy Fleetwood, is on the course, and I don't want to know how he's doing based on how he played yesterday. So.
Tommy Fleetwood, it has not gone well. All right, since you were watching and you watched
42 right now.
Well, that's not that. He'll make the cut at least.
He'll make the cut. Yeah, no, well, could be worse, but he's not. You know, he's not playing as well as a Cameron.
Couple of no. And one of them went to Wake Forest.
I mean, Wake just keeps pumping out major competing.
What is this?
Like we all know, like Arnie, Ray, and Webb, yeah. But now it's like one a year, Will, and now Cameron. I mean, it's amazing.
Young's had a really good year. He's already had a few top three finishes.
Missed the cut. Augusta killed me. Don't get me started.
Oh, really? Okay. We won't discuss it. All right, real quick, since you started there, Tiger.
Yeah.
He just couldn't putt. So tee to green, it wasn't amazing, but that wasn't the problem. The problem was he just left every single putt well short. He couldn't lag putt. He couldn't putt from 4 feet. All of it, it was just a mess. It looked like a 12 handicapper on the greens.
Yeah, I think you tweeted it, and I agreed when I saw it, and other people said it. He just looks like a guy who hasn't played much.
Yeah.
You know, looks like, you know, it's the difference for anybody, like someone like you or me. If we haven't played in a month and we go out, our short game's probably going to be pretty bad. Our timing's going to be a little off. And even at that level, a layoff like that, and just, you know, it's not like he's going out and playing, you know, Wakefield. Like, it's St. Andrews, especially today, it's playing different. You know, it's just, you're going to have some 60-foot putts. You're going to have some chips uphills and over swales and through depressions and whatever. It's hard. It's a short game course. Obviously, you know, the way those courses lay out, you can just bomb it most of the time, but you're going to have some delicate chips and putts, and that's the part of his game that's missing. But to see him standing on the bridge and know that it was the last time, it was pretty emotional. And you contrast that with the fact that nobody cares about Phil probably in his last Open. It certainly tells you the way the game has gone lately.
Yeah, Phil's been he's been his own worst enemy, and this has created. Actually, it's funny. Taylor Gooch said it today that the players who have chosen to go play for LIV feel the vitriol. So Ian Poulter, Patrick Reed were both booed on the first tee yesterday and today.
Not the first time Patrick Reed has been booed.
That's true.
Let's be forthright about that.
In Scotland, it would be for Ian Poulter. I kind of agree with Taylor Gooch that there has been some animosity, and I'm not saying it isn't even justified, but there has been. He says they were fueled by it. There's a lot of LIV players who have played. Look, there's a lot of good players who are playing on that tour. I mean, Dustin Johnson is still one of the best, you know, 15 to 20 players on earth. So I'm not surprised that he's had a good tournament. Taylor Gooch is a really good young player. Without getting into the whole live thing, and Phil has become a villain, unfortunately. And he is not. I mean, the RNA basically told him, "Hey, look, you can play here this week, but we kind of really need you to stay away from this celebration." Whether that's right or wrong. Let me just move on, because we could get lost in this whole thing. Tiger's not going to play at Wyndham.
Just wanted, is that a question?
I just no. I just you could. He's not going to play at Wyndham, so that's unfortunate. Were you there the year he played at Wyndham?
Yeah, I was. I was there for a couple of days. It was insane. I mean, it was like a Sedgefield on steroids.
And it was just a major.
The way that the entire world revolved around him for those couple of days, and then for him to play as well as he did, given the circumstances, it ended up being a great story. So, it is what it is. It is what it always will be. It's good to see him back around the game, and good to see him at, you know, St. Andrews, and good to see him at Augusta. You know, hopefully we'll see him at Pinehurst. It's just hard to say. Mm-hmm. He just looks so beat up.
Yeah, well, I think that as long as he can walk, I think he'll play the majors and a few other tournaments here and there, and I believe that will start next year. Let's get to one thing before we get to the Hurricanes, and you can be as quick on this as possible. As you want. There was an article in the NNO today about the potential for South Carolina and Clemson to once again be friends within a conference. Do you see anything like that happening?
I mean, briefly, yeah. I mean, I think if the grant of rights is threatened, if it's clear that schools are leaving, then yeah. I mean, I think it's realistic that Clemson, Miami, and Florida State all jump to the SEC, and I think that's more likely than anybody else leaving for the Big Ten, to be quite honest. You know, there's a lot going on there. I think it's a threat. I think there is definitely a chance that Clemson could at some point jump to the SEC. I don't think it's imminent.
Why do you think the grant of rights is going to be threatened? Or do you?
I don't know. It's never really been challenged in court in the Big 12 or the ACC. Mm-hmm. The ACC's grant of rights is literally a cut and paste of the Big 12's. It's just we don't know. There's questions about whether it's a contract. The fact that no one has challenged it suggests it's pretty strong. But if we get to a point where, one, as it winds down, it becomes weaker because you're talking about less money. I think there's always that threat there of those three schools leaving because they have strong football brands, and regardless of the complete lack of success Miami has had in this generation. Mm-hmm. It's still a football brand. It's still valuable to television and all that. So, yeah, no, I that was not brief. But, yes, I mean, I think
no.
In those specific circumstances where the grant of rights is under threat, there is absolutely a chance that South Carolina could end, or Clemson and South Carolina could end up in the SEC together.
At some point, and I look forward to when Texas and Oklahoma join the SEC, when reality sets in. And now we look at standings. Like, I don't think Oklahoma will have as much of a problem as Texas, but man, it's going to get real pretty quick when the schedule doesn't involve TCU and, you know, Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, I think UCLA and USC are going to have the same problem. I mean, they haven't exactly been setting the world on fire with all those games against Arizona and Arizona State and Oregon State and mm-hmm. Washington State. That's going to change really quickly for them, especially when every single one of their teams has to fly across the country to play all but one of their conference opponents. But let's get to the Hurricanes, because we got stuff to say.
All right. So people keep asking me, is this team better today than it was last year? And my answer has always been that they're not done yet. At least I hope they're not done. Where do you think they are in this reconstruction?
I mean, if they are done, and really, honestly, the only thing that I feel like that's out there to add, given their cap situation and all that, is a left D, and those things are a dime a dozen. Those guys are not hard to find. You'll get a better one on waivers at the end of training camp, maybe, than you will now. I think if you look at all the changes, they're all upgrades with the exception of one. Pacioretty's an upgrade over Niederreiter.
Mm-hmm.
Burns is a huge upgrade over D'Angelo. I mean, even at his age, they're not even close to the same class of player. Kokiemi and Trocheck, I mean, we just don't know. I mean, he's supposed to be better than Trocheck. He hasn't been so far, but he's still very young, and he'll be give it a bunch of minutes. Drury is an upgrade over Lawrence. Steven Nason's going to play. Kashe is a complete wild card. You could get something for nothing with him. And you know, the Coughlin kid they like a lot. Now they have an overload of right-shot defensemen. That's an odd problem to have in a lead where everybody's always salivating over right-shot defensemen. But when I look at the changes on a granular level and then I look at them in a global level, you know, what did you need? You needed a not just a replacement for Tony DeAngelo, but an upgrade. Mm-hmm. And you got him for the same cap hit that DeAngelo got in Philly, and you gave up nothing to get him, basically. Right. I mean, everyone loves Stevie Lawrence. He's a great kid, but he's a replaceable part.
Right.
Idu Mekeniemi is now behind Kochetkov on the totem pole. He's expendable. It's and a third-round pick is a third-round pick. They've managed to accumulate quite a few of them. And then you get Pacioretty and Coughlin for literally nothing.
Right.
Pacioretty, if he stays healthy, is a guy who's, you know, a serial 30-goal scorer.
Right.
He's exactly the kind of guy they needed against the Rangers. He'll help the power play. He'll help at even strength. They create chances. They need guys who can finish chances. And now, by adding Kashe, by adding Pacioretty, you've put real pressure on Marty Natchez to put up or shut up. He's going to be on a bridge deal. He's running out of time. Mm-hmm. If he's going to turn the corner, it's got to be now. And you know, that he's got to fight for a top 9 spot now, let alone a top 6 spot. But these are all good things.
Well, I'm not even sure that there's a top 6 spot for Martin Natchez at all, because Pacioretty is going to play. My guess is, this is what we do, we map it out. I have Pacioretty with Aho and Jarvis. As Svechnikov and Tara Vinen are going to play around Kokniemi, I would imagine. And then the stall line might just become the checking line. Maybe you put Jordan Martinook with Stahl and Jesper Fast. And that fourth line becomes Jack Drury surrounded by Natchez and Andre Kasha. Stefan Nason, he could come back. He could play in the minors. He's on a two-way deal, although he might have to clear waivers to go back to the minors. I'm not sure. But they have a bunch of options. I don't think Lane Peterson is going to play here. Certainly not not until there are some injuries. But I still think they need some size. That's where Mason Marshman would have been so good for this team, because he's got speed, he's got size and scoring touch. I still think they need some of that.
Yeah, I don't. I think the guys you can get for the cap space they're going to have available once they figure out what to do with Gardner isn't going to help them that much. And I look, if this team is going to win, it's not because it's going to wake up tomorrow and be some version of the Broad Street Bullies. It's going to win because it outskills people. It's going to win because it outscores people. The guys they've added should help with that. They're going to be better defensively. Like, no one's confusing Brent Burns with Jacob Slavin, but they're going to be better defensively with Burns on that right side than they were with DeAngelo. Pacioretty is going to score the kind of goals he always has if he stays healthy. He's going to score the kind of goals they didn't score last year. They added a natural goal scorer. Drury's going to be an upgrade. Like everybody knew what Jack Drury had in terms of leadership and hustle and fitness and vision. But the offensive season he had in the AHL, if that's not a total fluke, you know, he's got something to contribute at the NHL level. That's a bonus. That's the reason he dropped to the second round, given that everything else about him was great. If he's got that offensive upside, you throw him in there too. Like you said, you have a fourth line that maybe scores more. And, you know, if Kashe has any kind of bounce back to where he was a couple years ago when the Hurricanes were willing to give up Justin Falk to get him, you know, and look, it's not his fault. He's had concussions. He's had other injuries. He's a fragile player, for lack of a better word, but he's an extremely talented player who can score goals. If he has any kind of a bounce back season, like if you just look at the raw numbers from last year, even if you say the Hurricanes overachieved by 5%, whatever, you're adding goals. You've added goals at every single position where you've made the change. You lose Trocheck, but look, they've got a huge investment, a huge gamble on Kokiemi. If that's not going to work, they're in trouble anyway. Right. So you might as well throw him in the Trocheck spot, and you don't necessarily have a two center. You have a couple two A's, but whatever. I think the one place I think they're going to miss, and maybe this goes to your point, I don't think there's a great fit, even Martinook, because of his speed, with Stahl and Fast, the way that Niederreiter turned out to be such a great fit.
Yeah, and his fragile nature, right? He gets hurt a lot.
Right. Yeah, no, if you were going to add one guy, I mean, I think it's maybe a guy who can fill that spot. But again, that's a guy who maybe you may get a better player in that role coming out of training camp off waivers than you do now when you're overpaying for the guy. So, you know, Marchment would have, like, Marchmont in that role makes it a killer line.
Yeah.
That would have been amazing. But it didn't work out, you know, and that's how it goes sometimes. But yeah, I mean, but I don't feel like, look, I look at the playoffs and all that. To me, it wasn't that they got pushed around. They maybe got pushed around mentally. But the problem was they couldn't score. And the problem was their power play went dry. Tony D'Angelo turned into Dougie Hamilton against the Bruins, against the Rangers. And their best players weren't good enough. And unless that changes, they're going to live the same dream over and over.
And that's when people have asked, who are they going to bring in? And I said this earlier in the show, and we'll just close on this. If you think that Max Pacioretty is the guy that puts Carolina over the top, I think you're wrong, and it's for this reason. Carolina will only go as far when we get to the playoffs as Andrei Svechnikov, Sebastian Aho, Teuvo Teravainen, Seth Jarvis, and to an extent, Jesperi Kotkaniemi take them. Those are the guys that, and Martin Natchez possibly, those are the guys that have to have more of an impact on the game. Aho was the best of those, and Aho wasn't quite what he was during the regular season. That's probably putting it mildly. They got almost nothing out of anybody else.
Yeah, and the defense wasn't helping. You know, D'Angelo wasn't great. He had been for three quarters of the regular season. I think if you get into the playoffs, you're going to be able to count on Brent Burns as a, even at 37, as a game changing player. So I think that's true. It comes down to this: you built around that core. That core has to deliver at some point. They really did, to the extent they could, in 19 and 20. And 21, there were other issues. But 22, that group fell short. And as I wrote after the playoffs, this is the first time the Hurricanes have regressed under Rod Brind'Amour. You know, that some of that is Dr. Heal Thyself stuff, not what you do in free agency and over the summer.
Tommy Fleetwood, just short of the 18th green off the tee, 3 under par. So I'm rooting for you, Luke DeCock. There you go.
Thank you, buddy.
Tommy. Are you growing a mustache?
It's a one-day mustache. I shaved my beard this morning.
Okay. I have no comment.
I don't want you to comment.
We're going to talk to Brent Burns in less than an hour. That's a beard. I can't wait to see that facial hair in person. Luke DeCock of the News and Observer. Thank you, man.
I do not have the craziest facial hair on the show today. That's great to know.
All right, man. Take care.
See you, bud.
You got it. Luke DeCock of the NNO. All right, halftime. Let's do it.
Entertainment.
All right, sir. What would you like to do?
I would actually like to ask Brent Burns about beard tips, since I have one myself. Not as long as what he's got going on, but
does he moisturize?
You have to. You have to. If you're going to have a beard, you have to moisturize. And the key is getting to the roots. It's about protecting the skin.
Is it? Yes.
Yes.
Moisturize from the skin up, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do. All right. Pac-12 is in media negotiations right now.
Should be fun.
It should be interesting. It appears ESPN might be the front runner, and there's still the rumor, I guess you can call it a rumor, the speculation that there might be a media partnership once again between the Pac-12 and the ACC. I can't remember if I talked with Hayes about this or not. I think I talked to
him. It was yesterday.
No, it wasn't yesterday.
Oh, okay.
I think it may have been last week.
Oh, okay,
when you
yes.
Were
they were talking about a scheduling alliance.
Well, not necessarily a scheduling alliance. Possibly with that. But the Pac-12 would actually have games that would appear on the ACC network. So the ACC network would basically evolve into this ACC Pac-12 mashup, as opposed to just having their own separate channel. So ESPN will be in partnership with both the Pac-12 and the ACC and basically making it this quote-unquote super channel, for lack of a better term. I don't know what exactly they would do, but there is a speculation that the ACC network would actually be a place where Pac-12 football and basketball could live. So, for example, after, let's say there's a game at 7 o'clock on a Saturday between Pitt and Carolina, because mm-hmm. we all want that partnership to still exist, right?
Sure.
So Pitt and Carolina, they play. Once that game's over, before you know, you're getting a Pac-12 game, you got Oregon State playing Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And that game would kick off at 10 o'clock because it'd be 7 o'clock out on the West Coast. Or you would join in progress as opposed to just going to just other programming on the ACC network. So more live games. I don't know how this is going to work, but it would also give the Pac-12 the ability to put Olympic sports and other sports on ESPN Plus so they have a streaming platform as opposed to the Pac-12 having its own network thing that they had previously. That stinks.
I think that would reflect just so poorly on the ACC. Like, there should be enough programming.
Well, yeah.
They should. First of all, does ESPN give a damn about the ACC network?
Does the ACC network?
No, no. I would hope the ACC network did, right? I'm not sure ESPN does.
I don't know.
Honestly, during basketball season, how many times did you go to half and there was a recorded halftime? Like, we can't even just go to the studio and give you highlights from other ACC games.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a canned from Packer and Durham. It would be like a debate. Who's got the best helmets in the ACC? I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just not sure that ESPN cares enough about it. I really don't. There's no real programming there. Packer and Durham was the only real show they had.
Yeah.
They have good people. Like the Jordan Cornettes and Eric McLean's and the Kelly Gramlicks.
Kelsey Riggs.
Kelsey Riggs. These people are talented people, right? Mm-hmm. But there's only so many of them, right? They're not going to be on every day. It is an underwhelming product, to be perfectly honest. It's just an underwhelming product.
For example, our friends.
Maybe the league's underwhelming, to be honest. I don't know.
Our friends Joe Ovius and Joe Giglio, when I was working with them a little bit last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, I can't remember.
You don't remember anything.
I've worked
it's
so
much.
It's
all that ketchup you put on chicken sandwiches.
Yes, exactly. This is a side effect. So they brought up when the ACC announced their schedule, their 3-5-5.
Right.
It's like, well, why couldn't that have been like a TV thing? You could have done that on the ACC network, repurposed all that video for social media and the likes. And I thought, well, yeah, they should have done that. That would have been a great idea to do mm-hmm. because it would have got either A, eyeballs there, but at least you could have had that content to push out there. So I give credit to Ovius and Giglio for coming up with that idea or saying, like, why didn't the ACC network do this? I don't know. There's so much time to fill. You got to have some other original content on there. I know they did the documentary during or around the ACC network or about the ACC. ACC tournament.
That's really good.
Yeah, it is. But right. Like, you got to look, if you're going to have a network, you got to invest in it.
Yep.
That's just the way
they do not appear willing to do that.
All right, for some reason, there we go. Now okay. It wants to play. It's all the ketchup. It must be stuck.
I'm telling you.
A little bit, I guess you say, lack of a better term, breaking news in a sense here. The Texans, who were also put on the lawsuits by 30 women that accused Deshaun Watson of sexual misconduct, the Texans have reached settlements with 30 women. This is according to their attorney, Tony Busby. Terms, all that, not going to be released. But Watson had settled 20 of the lawsuits last month, and there are still six additional women potentially reaching settlements. But 30 women have reached settlements with the Texans.
Yeah, so 20 have settled with Deshaun Watson.
Mm-hmm.
30 have settled with the Texans. Been a good offseason for the NFL.
Yep. Still have not heard anything yet regarding a suspension.
Been a great offseason. Oh, my gosh.
I know we haven't even talked about the Alvin Kamara situation either.
What did I miss?
Oh, it was sometime around the Pro Bowl. I think it was some sort of like domestic violence thing. But we haven't heard anything suspension regarding him yet either. All right, final thing. Cameron Young, Wake Forest grad, 10 under through 16 holes here at the British Open. That's right, I said it.
Wow.
He's wearing a Major League Baseball patch on his left arm.
Yeah.
I noticed it. He's sponsored by Major League Baseball to wear a patch on his arm.
He's not the first.
Yeah, I know he's not, but it's just wild to see that. Yeah.
I think there have been other players in the PGA Tour to be sponsored by MLB. But Billy Andrade, who played for two decades on the PGA Tour, used to also be sponsored by Major League Baseball. I can't figure out why Major League Baseball would pay a golfer to wear an MLB patch. It's as though they're reminding people that baseball exists. Here's the thing. Payne Stewart at one point was sponsored by the National Football League. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah, in fact, Stewart would wear clothing, you know, his driver's cap.
Yeah.
And his plus fours. He would wear his knickers. He would wear clothing in the colors of the NFL team where they were playing. If he's playing in Florida, he's dressing in Miami Dolphins colors.
Okay. Right? That's cool.
His first major championship was a PGA outside of Chicago at Kemper Lakes, and he was wearing Chicago Bears colors.
Now that's cool.
So, yeah, it was kind of cool. But I don't think Cameron Young is doing that. It is definitely an odd sponsorship.
Yeah, well, I don't know what Major League Baseball colors he'd wear out in the UK, but...
Well, didn't the Yankees and Red Sox play there?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Maybe just saying. Did. Maybe.
All right, final thing actually here real fast. Major League Baseball draft starts today?
Yeah.
Rounds one and two?
It does.
Thoughts on the top prospects?
What?
I don't know. I'm kidding.
I
have no idea who any of these are. Actually, I've heard of Kumar Rocker because he played at Vanderbilt.
Oh, is he getting drafted again?
I think
so. Is he going back through the draft?
Yes.
He's in incredible shape. Dude, the Mets would not have, withdrawn their offer to him if his arm was in good shape. That was the problem.
Yeah.
So but he looks like he's physically in way better condition than he was a year ago. So he spent the last year getting in shape. Now, if his arm is good, then he has a chance to be really good.
Apparently, Drew Jones, a center fielder out of Wesleyan High School, who's a Vanderbilt commit, is projected to be the number one overall pick by the Baltimore Orioles.
Orioles have prospects, man. Good for the O's. I'm rooting for them. I am rooting for the Orioles. Look, people don't really pay close attention to the Major League Baseball draft because, for the most part, half the players you've never heard of. Even if you follow...
Half? That's lowballing it,
No, I don't think so. If you follow college baseball, then a lot of the guys you'll recognize.
Yeah,
right?
But not a lot of people follow college baseball.
Well, but I'm just saying, there's enough people that follow college baseball that you'll know some of the guys, right? But even if you follow college baseball, almost half of the players who get drafted, you will have no clue who they are because they're out of high school.
Yeah.
High school baseball doesn't get quite the run that high school basketball gets. No clue.
Apparently, a Duke commit out of Northern Allegheny High School in Pennsylvania is projected to go number 25 to the Yankees, named Cole Young.
Which means that he won't go to Duke. Which
probably
would be
not.
Like, I think, either the second or third year in a row that Duke has lost commits to the Major League Baseball draft.
Mm-hmm.
It's too bad.
Cole Young. He'd be a great NASCAR driver name.
Cole
Young is teammates with Cal Maker.
Is he going to do a reality show? Have you watched the reality show with Austin Dillon?
I have not. I
keep seeing the commercials for it. I just could not be less interested.
Kumar Rocker projected to go 24 to Boston.
Hey, look, I hope the kid has a great career. Mets drafted him, I think, 10th last year and then said, you know what? Nah, ain't doing it, which is absolutely weird. To essentially eliminate a draft pick. It's like, nope, not interested. All right.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19th, 2006. But it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Kane's 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.
Every day at 1:45, we place bets. And when I'm not here, Hayes Permar eats into my winnings. It's very disappointing. He lost all three of his bets yesterday. If you're going to take favorites, if you're going to take bets with minus money, you better win.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you doing, Hayes? I thank Hayes Permar, though, for sitting in, doing the show. All right, Dennis. Let's do this. Now that I'm back, you can go back to winning.
Place your bets.
Ooh, yeah.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Death. Okay, you can owe me. I owe you this.
By the way, I'm losing all my golf bets anyway, so it's not like Hayes is the only one losing bets. All right, Dennis Cox, give us a start.
I'll go to the British Open. Victor Hovland, top 10 live betting, +115.
That's where we are now. The only thing to bet is golf.
Oh, there's more. There's more than just golf.
Oh, I'm sure, because you're going to give us professional lacrosse wagers. And
do you really want me to give you a bet on the
UCF
All-Star game this weekend?
What, the PLL All-Star game this weekend?
Yeah, you can bet on the PLL All-Star game this weekend.
Aren't they always All-Star games?
No.
Okay. Take your word for it. All right, let's see where I'm going to start. We're going to start at the Open Championship. Again, live betting. Taylor Gooch to top 10 at +220. I like it. I like Taylor Gooch. Good young player. Very, very, very good young player. Of all the players that went over to play the LIV Tour, or as Dan Hicks called it, the rival league. He couldn't say LIV.
Yeah.
Is it offensive?
Yeah.
Of all the players to go, that was the one that was the most curious to me. Gooch is a legit good young player. Mm-hmm. So to top 10 at +220. You're up.
Okay. I'm going to go to the UFC. I gave one UFC bet yesterday. Amanda Lemos takes on Michelle Waterson. Lemos is a heavy favorite at -305, but I'm going to take her winning by knockout TKO or DQ at +225.
Okay, I don't know who that is.
Okay.
So you'll have to tell me how you did later on. Honestly, every lacrosse and every UFC fight you bet, every lacrosse bet, every fight, you know, whether it's MMA or whatever, you do, you could just put down a win.
Okay.
I honestly have no idea.
Someone out there will fact
yes.
check, man.
That's why we do these on the air.
Yeah.
Right? Because so people keep tabs on all
and
of it.
It's on the Best of podcast. I throw it out there, yeah. Too.
I'm glad you do. All right, let's go back to the Open Championship. I'm going to do another top 10. Adam Scott.
Okay.
+170 to top 10.
Yeah.
Adam Scott. There you go. By the way, he shot a 65 today. 7 under par for Adam Scott today.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
They asked him if he was still feeling what happened, 20 years ago at Royal Lytham, where he bogeyed the last four holes to lose by one to Ernie Els.
That's
he bogeyed four straight holes coming in. He was, like, completely tied in knots. He won the Masters the next year, so good for him.
Still, that's rough.
Yep, very much so.
That is rough. All right, I'm going to go to Euro Women's. Okay. Norway takes on Austria. Norway is actually a -105 in this one, but I'm going to go with a draw, +290.
Very
Norway,
nice.
Norway, Austria, draw +290.
Do you see what England is favored over Northern Ireland?
It's like -10,000.
-10,000.
It's
Are you
I was
kidding
like,
me?
Goodness.
Are you out of your mind?
Hayes would lose it.
-10,000? That is insane. Absolutely insane. All right, let's go to the Women's Euro Spain and Denmark. Give me Spain minus two goals at plus 128. Spain minus two at plus 128. Spain should win. Two is a lot. They're not minus 10,000 to win outright. Gosh, who's betting that?
Hey, I guarantee. You know, someone actually made a bet. Trevor Lawrence was like a minus 39,000 to be the number one overall pick when he was drafted by Jacksonville. Someone actually put a big bet on it. And, you know, obviously made a little bit of money. It's like, well, if you have a lot of money that you can make, mm-hmm. you know, a couple grand, sure, go
you
for
just,
it. It's
if you just think about it as investing,
yeah.
Yeah. That's fine.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.